You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found in the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kateman, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming / preparing to learn from Tom Robillard, the CEO and co-founder of Veyroot. Tom, how are you doing today?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you.
Awesome. So I appreciate you being on the show here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. I saw you speak at 1 Million Cups, and you have a cool little invention there.
Thank you.
So how about you tell the listeners what you got going on, and we'll go from there.
Okay. What I presented at 1 Million Cups is a vehicle stereo replacement. Goes inside the dashboard of your car. We're a company focused on automotive electronics. All the founders of our company are excited about cars, but a little disappointed with the technology in cars.
All right.
And what we've created is a product we call the Shelf. You can find out more about it at Veyroot.com.
Sure.
VEHROOT.com.
Okay.
And it allows you to use any size or brand mobile device as the center display in your dash.
Sure. So phone, tablet, whatever you got with a screen.
Yep.
Shy of a 27-inch tube TV or something like that.
I probably don't want to go much past 10.
Yeah. Okay.
But you just simply set your device on it, and it's held in the center dash.
Okay.
And then if it's a phone, it'll charge wirelessly and then operate as the as your infotainment system in the vehicle. So it'll give you, of course, nav.
Sure.
Stream your audio.
Okay.
And allow you to take calls as well.
Nice. So is there a wire that has to be connected from the phone or tablet to this unit?
No.
The shelf thing?
Nope. That's the beauty of it.
All right.
It's very easy to use. Just set your device on there and go.
All right.
And so something that's very hard to convey just by speaking is when you set your device on it, it's just like setting it on the table, but it's held on there until you go to take it off.
So yeah, that thing is tough.
We've developed a means of holding very large devices to the dash just by setting them on there.
So even a person like me that takes corners like a Mario and Daddy, no problem.
Yeah, I've tested some of that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. On ramps, be prepared. Here we go. So this is essentially a replacement for a given stereo within a car. Is that correct?
Correct. You'd take the stereo that's in the dash out and then put our product in.
Right.
And our long-term vision is that your phone or tablet takes over all the functions of your car.
Okay.
So right now we provide a way to listen to your books or music and nav and things that you're used to doing on your infotainment system.
Sure.
But as we continue to develop this product, it will pull diagnostics from the car and do everything that the screen's doing today.
Sure.
And beyond.
Okay.
The idea is that if you use a mobile device as a display in your car, you can start bringing in apps and really open up development in the vehicle.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What's interesting is I was listening to you speak and I was thinking the infotainment system that I have in one of my cars has a voice thing so you can tell it to play a song or call someone.
Yeah.
And it is so bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
So bad.
Yeah, if it's my car, it's bad.
I get frustrated because I'm like, you know, play Michael Jackson, whatever. And it's like, no, I don't understand what you're saying.
Right.
And you'll be like, play Michael Jackson, whatever.
Most people have given up on that.
Yeah, and I feel like I shouldn't want to punch my new car. But at that moment, I want to punch my new car. I feel like if you would have dropped the price, you know, a few hundred bucks that I didn't have that technology, it would be an improvement because the technology is that bad.
Yeah, and people are paying, whether they realize it or not, several thousand dollars for these screens in the car.
All right.
And so our solution is much less expensive than that, a fraction of that price, about 10%, a few hundred bucks.
Okay.
And and then you can talk to it to that point. We have a button on here where it's a microphone button.
Okay.
So if you're in the middle of a song or doing whatever, you press that button and you can talk. You can say call.
Sure, Michael Jackson.
Call home. Call right.
So maybe not. So the software that you're interacting with on that thing, is that your software or is that Google based or how does that work?
Well, there's firmware that that controls the electronics itself.
Okay.
But it's really open.
Okay.
Onto what software you use. So Apple, Android, even Windows. I have a Windows tablet on here right now.
Okay. It's exclusive to the brand of tablet or phone that you have on there.
It's open to any brand, any size, any brand.
Okay.
And any future product too as well. It's simply we're just taking data and audio over a Bluetooth connection.
Okay.
So if your device will rest on here, and which pretty much any device will any case right. in any case.
Sure.
And then connect Bluetooth, mm-hmm. you're golden.
Nice.
Yep.
So does your is there an app or anything like that on the phone or tablet itself?
Not that's required. No, I usually run Android Auto in the car.
Okay.
And that's nice. If you have a Android device, the yeah. Android Auto is an app you can download, and it's designed so that when you're in the car, you have a nice user interface that gives you quick access to everything.
Oh, and, I'm out of touch. I didn't even know that existed.
It's out there. So,
all right.
You don't even need our product for that, but nice. You can put a mount up there, run Android Auto, and it works really well.
Okay.
As a replacement for whatever's in your car.
Sure.
Apple, there was rumor they'd put CarPlay out there.
Right.
But I haven't seen it yet.
All right.
At least not on phones.
Sure.
And Windows is pretty easy when you put it in tablet mode
okay.
to operate.
Sure.
But further down the road, we intend to have our own app. And okay. our own app will be an interface similar to Android Auto, but it will give you your backup camera will automatically pop up when you start the car.
Okay.
For example, it'll give you a lot of diagnostics.
Sure.
And there's a lot of information happening inside the vehicle that's kind of closed off to us for
oh,
the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so we want to open that up
all right.
and give people access to know, you know, how each fuel injector is performing on
sure.
our engine, if they want to know.
Oh, they could.
You know, some people won't care to have that much detail, but we want to put whatever details people are interested in
sure.
on their mobile device.
So there's the people that just put the electrical tape over the check engine light and the other
right.
people that say, my car's telling me something. What is it telling me?
Well, and I think if people knew what the engine light meant,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't be as inclined to just cover it up. I mean, if you're, so here's a scenario I envision mm-hmm. down the road with our device. You're driving mm-hmm. down the road and your engine light comes on and your car says to you, James, the front right sensor in your ABS system has failed. The average cost to replace this part is this. Would you like to schedule the repair?
Oh, that's magical.
Having that kind of interaction with
sure.
your vehicle. And it's something that I personally feel should be here today,
totally.
but it's still a long ways off.
Sure.
And so that's part of why I'm passionate to get this going.
Gotcha.
To improve our vehicles.
Yeah. I was frustrated with my car because it'll say, like, the tire pressure monitoring light will come on, mm-hmm. but it doesn't say which tire is low. So it's just right. like, go ahead and guess.
And your car knows.
It totally knows.
It knows. Right? It's just not showing you.
I'm yeah. like, how much more would it really have taken for you to tell me specifically what tire was low?
Right.
Instead, you got to, you know, I remember I was driving across country and the light came on. So I'm like, all right, we got to go. And you pull over to some gas station. It's one of those gas stations that doesn't have free air. So yeah. you got to stick your credit card in there for the $1.50 or whatever. And I'm going around to each tire. It turns out there must just be a sensor that's bad. I don't know which one.
Oh.
All the pressures were fine. I'm like, this is dumb.
As a side note to that, Car Talk, I was
yeah.
listening. They said, when that light comes on, feel your tires. The hottest tire is the one that's low.
All right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, because a low-pressure tire will certainly be hotter. Yeah.
That was good advice, because so I have a car just like you.
This one with the gauge, all the gauge says they're all at, I don't know, it's 38 PSI or whatever. They're all fine, pressure-wise.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I'm like,
bad sensor,
really?
Then. Yeah.
If it would have told me left front, I'd check left front, and like, oh, the PSI is fine, we're good to go, move on with your life. But no. Yeah. I'm like, I still don't know which one is bad.
Yeah, and everything that's happening in your car is a mystery.
Yeah.
And it's really, there are tools you can buy, like an OBD plug.
Sure.
You put in, and then an app, and you'd just be amazed at what data's in there.
Oh, it's tons. Super
it's
cool
just,
stuff. Yeah.
You know, and the automakers just haven't figured out a real good way to put that data in front of us.
Right.
And
so is that by choice? Like, is that something they're trying to hide from us intentionally?
I personally believe it's more user interface.
Okay.
You know, how do
they don't want to confuse people. Enough.
Right. Overwhelm people with
sure.
data.
Sure. Somebody that's not mechanical at all going to the mechanic being like, my left right. front fuel injector's blown or whatever. And the mechanic's like, actually, it's
right.
the wiring that's bad. It's not the fuel injector itself. And having to argue with some lady that looked at her. She had the display that said the fuel injector is bad.
Right.
When there's really a diagnostics that has to happen beyond that to make sure.
So with the development path we're on, we'll be able to give people as much or as little data as they want.
Sure. That's super cool. So this is a replacement for any stereo, or is there a limitation?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this is what we call a doubled in size.
Sure.
So almost all modern vehicles have an opening in the dash that
yep.
will accommodate this.
Mm-hmm.
And it may even be hard to believe looking at the dash in most newer vehicles, especially, that you could even replace that screen in there or
right.
radio, but you can.
Sure.
There are companies that, Metra, Soshi, there are a couple of them
okay.
that work to make dash kits, and they're about a year behind the new vehicles.
Sure.
But if you've got, say, a 2019, 2018, mm-hmm. you could go out today and find a dash kit or wiring nice. Harness that would allow you to pull the screen out.
Okay.
With some exceptions.
Sure.
But most cars. And there's several companies here in town that mm-hmm. will do that work for you, including okay. Best Buy. And
sure. So the information that you are that unit is gathering, mm-hmm. or I guess there's in and out, right? So out is just speakers, and those are standard, right?
Yep.
But is there any information coming in that you had essentially reverse engineer the code?
Well, that's an interesting topic. So when you plug your phone into the dash, mm-hmm. your vehicle or many vehicles are taking data from your phone and yeah. sending it right out to the manufacturer.
Oh, that's nice of them.
And right. yep. There's some good articles about that. Can't think of one offhand, but
sure.
Yeah, they pull in, those units will pull in your contact list and keep track of your travel information and things like that.
Yep. It's nice of them.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they justify it. I'm sure they say, we need to know how people are driving and how sure. they're using the car and how they're using the infotainment system. But,
right.
Yep. But yeah, there's just not a good, I think it really comes down to the user interface in cars.
Okay.
You know, people just haven't it taken the time to learn.
Sure.
My wife just got a new Honda CR-V.
Okay.
And menu upon menu upon menu upon menu. I mean, I was pretty impressed really with the tech in there. But yeah, just people are familiar with, our angle is this, people are familiar with their phones
sure.
and their tablets.
Sure.
And so you start with that user interface and you build on that and you can do a lot from there.
Sure. I imagine it's a challenge, right? Because a lot of people haven't figured out their turn signals.
Right. So, doesn't seem like it anymore.
It seems like this should be fairly easy, right?
Yes.
But in the end, we're actually asking people to go through a few menus. So I'm wondering, a lot of the infotainment stuff has other controls, like for climate and stuff like that, besides just the stereo aspect. So yes. Is this taking that on as well?
Yes, we intend to.
Okay.
We're not today. So we're at stage one here. This sure. is our first product.
Okay.
And we're proving out just interest in the general idea
of sure.
being able to use your mobile device.
Okay. But
yes, absolutely. We are able to take that information today.
Sure.
But we just haven't developed apps on it.
Gotcha.
If you have a vehicle that has your climate controls and mm-hmm. things in it, mm-hmm. most of the dash kits I was talking about earlier,
yeah.
move that down to another screen.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yeah. All right. So I had a 08 Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Okay.
And yeah, the seat controls and heat controls were all up in the screen.
Sure.
But the dash kit took all of those and put them into a screen under that main screen, which was actually better.
Okay.
And made the dash look more simple.
Sure.
Made everything more simple. And then I was able to use my mobile device.
Gotcha.
So there's a way.
All right.
If you're frustrated with the tech in your car.
Sure.
There's a way.
All right.
To improve it.
All right. Yep. That's fair. I didn't know. I imagine every manufacturer has probably got different ones and zeros, right? For their programming of their heater, power seats and all that jazz.
It's all pretty common. I mean, so some of the protocols in vehicles, I'll just list off a few, like CAN, iBus, digital,
sure.
resistive. And there's even been talk about just having the vehicle communications be standard IP.
Oh,
like
really?
What we do in networking. Yeah. And some people, I think some cars have implemented that.
Sure.
I'd love to see that across the board.
Right.
But yeah, the protocols are fairly common. So, and it's by maker. So if you have a BMW, that's digital. If you have a Chrysler product, it's CAN.
Okay.
Fiat Chrysler.
Sure.
And so our unit does, if I get real nerdy on you here, what we've really made is a communications router.
Sure.
That picks up all those protocols in the vehicle and translates them into a common protocol called UART, which you can develop mobile apps on. It's like a keyboard input.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So when did you start this? Is this a year?
Yeah, so 2015 is when I had the aha moment.
Okay.
Like this would be a good platform.
When you wanted to punch the stereo in your car.
Yeah. Well, that story starts, so I'll take you back.
Sure.
2015.
All right.
I used to have a job where I traveled a lot.
Okay.
Like, I was gone all week almost.
Sure.
For most of the month.
Okay.
And every week I'd get a new rental car from Enterprise.
All right.
And I had a duffel bag that I carried with me, a small duffel bag filled with cables and mounts.
Okay.
And the first 10 minutes in the car, at least, I would be setting up my phone in the car.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And so on one of these trips, it was actually down to Cincinnati, I thought, man, it sure would be nice if I could just set my phone in the dash.
Sure.
Just set my phone in the dash and go.
Right.
And that makes sense. Why can't we do this? So then on the trip down and back, I thought about, well, how could that happen?
Right.
And when I got back, I met with a friend of mine here in Madison. His name's Ben Fisher.
Okay.
And he works in prototyping at Trek. So I knew he could help me 3D print a mock-up.
Sure.
And I built one.
Okay.
And I put it in my, I had a Jeep Grand Cherokee at the time.
Sure.
Put it in there. And everybody that got in my car just went nuts. Like, this is a great idea.
Yeah.
This works great.
Right.
And then I was selling a tablet.
Okay.
An old Nexus tablet that I'd used for navigation. It was kind of like a GPS.
Mm-hmm.
And I took some pictures of it in my car. And within a day of having it on eBay, I had several people message me and ask me how they could get whatever it was that was in my car.
That's awesome. And they don't want the tablet, just the shelf.
Yeah,
the
not really interested in the tablet, but how do I get that? So one guy even offered to give me a few $100 to build one for him. So I thought, well, maybe we're onto something here.
Sure.
So then we went, and this was still... then in early 2016, we went to the Madison Startup Fair and figured we could build 10 of these, my rough functional prototypes,
sure,
and just see what people thought.
All right.
And people went nuts. And we asked people to sign up to let us put these in their car.
Sure.
And we got 10 strangers to let us put these in their car, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we told everybody, hey, in a few months we'll come back and we'll take these out. But we just want to know what you liked, what you didn't like. But so then after 3 months when we went back, the short story is nobody wanted us to take them out. Everybody's like, can you just leave it in there? Is that okay?
Right.
And so then we, a close family friend of ours gave us some funding to develop our own electronics.
Sure.
And
let's just pause for a moment here. So at this point, when you have them in the 10 vehicles.
Yeah.
Is it literally a shelf, or is there electronics and stuff like that to go with it?
So it was a spark, what they call a spark fund, or a Bluetooth development board.
Okay.
And just kind of a hodgepodge of components that we put together.
Okay.
And then we just 3D printed the front.
So it had the stereo aspect to it?
Yes. Okay. And we just 3D printed everything.
Okay.
And used off-the-shelf components.
All right.
And one of the things we made ourselves was the adhesive or the gels. And that honestly didn't go too well. I mean, we mixed chemicals in the base. One of the guys mixed chemicals in his basement. And
these.
And they worked well enough to prove the point.
Sure.
Now we're using much better stuff.
Sure.
But after that, it kind of motivated us to keep going. And we built our own boards.
Nice.
And we really thought it'd be pretty simple to kind of just... Oh, we'll build this circuit board.
Sure.
And, mold these plastics and metal and be off.
Right.
And a couple of guys there's four founders of the company.
Okay.
One of them has worked in automotive electronics for 35 years. The other guy's head of prototyping. And both of them kind of cautioned me, like, look, it's probably not going to be as easy as just build one board and put it out there.
Sure.
But,
Right, the entrepreneur says, nonsense, we'll challenge accepted.
Get her done.
Yeah.
So we built one, and I was so confident that we were just going to go right to market with this thing. And I was so confident we flew in one of the other founder's cousins from California, who's a photographer, to take pictures of it in the dash get us ready for our social media campaign and all this stuff.
Sure.
The first one actually blew up and caught on fire.
Oh, no.
While the guy was in the car taking pictures.
Oopsie.
Because it turns out when you put wireless charging in a Bluetooth module and a cell radio, the phone, right on top of each other, they hit each other.
Oh.
That's why you don't see wireless chargers out on the market inside of radios.
Oh.
You see wireless chargers as a standalone device.
Sure.
Or if they're in a car, they're like in the center console, far away from all electronics.
Interesting. Okay.
So when you try to put wireless charging in the dash, you are exposing yourself to a lot of problems. So that fire turned out to be a good thing, because we were able to, we had spent a lot of money up to this point, so we weren't going to just turn around.
Sure.
But we found ways to shield.
Okay.
And build up the components on our board to avoid them catching on fire.
Nice.
And yeah, some companies that have looked at this said, well, why are all your components so expensive? Well,
sure.
They have to be tough for one thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, that did set us back. I got to say, you know, it's taken more than a year. It actually, as we've gone through prototypes, we've found we need to improve this, and we don't want them to catch on fire for one.
Sure, that's fair.
You know, we've had some acoustical improvements to make, and and a cool thing that's happened is a couple people have just come on board and helped us out, like professionals in industrial design and in acoustics. In wireless charging, and just sort of said, hey, let me help you out here.
All right.
But
that's super cool.
It is cool. It has been very nice.
Nice. So what do you see for the next few years? I guess what's the next step, the stage of the business?
So we're at the stage now where our designs are complete to build, but they're expensive to build.
All
so
right.
we're working to raise $500,000 to build 1,000 of them.
Sure.
And then that first 1,000 will allow us to define our market.
Okay.
And improve our market.
Sure.
So that we can build 10,000.
So essentially, you'll have to, if my math is correct, you'll have to find 500 people to put these in their cars. Is that right?
Well, so we're selling to dealers and distributors.
Okay.
And we recently went through a program here in Madison called G-Beta.
It's a
business accelerator program.
Yeah.
And the idea was to get the funding we need and get customers. Like, how do we get customers? And then how do we get the funding we need from angel investors?
Sure.
And they suggested we put a pre-order link on our website.
All right.
Which I was opposed to initially. I didn't like the idea of putting a pre-order link and communicating that these would be ready soon.
Sure.
But G-Beta said, well, if you don't get orders, engage interest, then you're never going to get the funding to build them.
Sure.
So do
it. Chicken and egg, right?
Yeah, it is.
Sure.
So we did it. And a remarkable thing happened. We, within a week of that link being on our website, it showed up on other websites.
Oh, wow.
And including some distributor websites and a popular mobile electronics blog called CE Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
And within one 24-hour period of time, our pilot inventory of 1,000 units was all claimed.
Wow.
So over and over again, we've proven interest.
Okay.
You know, every step of the way, we've kind of thought, well, are we on the right track here? We've gone to some auto shows that were kind of a do or die.
Sure.
And every time we kind of stick our neck out in public and show what we have, it's just...
Yeah,
Interest. There's interest.
Okay,
yeah, that's proven. So, we've got a list of dealers, over 30 dealers and distributors across the country.
Wow.
And
so, when you say dealer, you mean the Best Buys of the world, the AMSs of the world?
Yes, exactly. Dealers, distributors.
Okay.
Dealers and distributors.
So Crutchfield or stuff like that.
We haven't talked to Crutchfield.
Okay.
I have started talking to Best Buy.
Sure.
When I said connected car, I seemed to get their attention. So
right.
And Vox, they're the largest distributor of mobile electronics in the world.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they've already said, once you can give us a delivery date, we'll sign a PO. And then other distributors across the world.
Right.
The UK, Australia, we've got.
All right.
So over 30 distributors and probably about 50 individuals.
Wow.
That have come on and pre-ordered.
Okay.
So now it's just a matter of convincing... unfortunately, we can't just go to the bank.
Right.
We'd like to just go to the bank and say, okay, we've got orders. Let's do this. And
right.
And actually, we have done that. I say we can't, but I've tried.
Sure.
But
they're more than happy to tell you no.
Well, when they say, okay, it's going to take you how many months? It's going to take 9 months from the time we receive funding to have the product ready.
Okay, for manufacturing and all that kind of stuff? Okay.
To have the product in the consumer's hands. So that's a long time. And the other thing is even once we get through our pilot inventory, we're still in the red. So, as a startup, that's, you know, pretty typical. Like
probably
Bezos,
common.
I'm sure Amazon ran in the red for quite a while before.
Like up until a year or two
right? So that's a common story.
Sure.
So what it really takes is it takes an individual or a group of individuals, like a venture group or angel, angel group or single angel investor, to take an interest in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really where we're parked right now.
Okay.
We're not parked. You know, we're still working on our designs to improve them.
Sure.
We're still doing testing and still developing the product.
Right.
And the company.
Okay.
But getting product in customers' hands is really what we'd like to do.
Right.
More than anything else.
That's the name of the game, right?
Yes. And so to do that, we need to raise about $500,000.
All right.
Yeah.
And is that... I haven't raised money before, so is that a reasonable thing? Like, this doesn't seem like stupid money.
It is. And you know that I haven't raised money before either.
Okay.
That's part of the problem, sure. To be honest with you. I've had other businesses,
yeah,
but none that required a huge amount of capital right at the start.
Okay.
And so this is new for me, and that was a big attraction to the G-Beta program, mm-hmm, and programs like it, like Generator. We've applied to, sure, that. We may go through that.
Yep.
It's to show me, hey, you know, this is – and starting out, I just wanted to raise enough money, mm-hmm, to – get us on our feet for 3 to 4 years and never have to raise money again.
Okay.
Like I wanted millions of dollars.
Sure.
And so that's, I was focused on that.
Sure.
And I had many people say, look, you've got to scale back.
Right.
You've got to find a reasonable starting point.
All right.
And, you know, prove your market first.
Sure.
Prove your market. Actually sell them.
All right.
And start getting customer feedback. And once, right, we do that, then step up the raise a little,
sure,
bit. So I had my heart set on doing one single raise, but that's not normal,
sure,
for a seed.
All right.
There's stages you go through. You go,
sure,
through pre-seed, seed, series A, series B, series C.
Wow.
Those are kind,
all
of,
right,
the stages,
sure,
you go through to get on your own, to become,
all right,
know, fully grown.
Sure.
And so right now we're in seed stage.
Okay.
Going into seed stage.
Going into seed
stage. Going, okay, into seed stage. Leading, sure, pre-seed, going into seed.
Okay.
And, you know, this is, it's a tough stage because... you have to get somebody who loves the product,
sure,
themselves.
Okay.
At that point.
All right.
I think it's as much, and maybe even more, passion than it is wisdom necessarily.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. Probably a driver for a lot of businesses.
Yeah.
So I guess the people that have said no from an investment point of view, did they give you a reason?
Yeah. The clearest reason I've got, it's kind of funny, you know, I'll talk to an investor, and we've had a couple investors who are interested, and they're, this, yeah, is great, I would use this myself. And then they come,
sure,
back with, they start mumbling. I'm like, right, what is it? Tell us, because we need to,
right,
know. Common thing I hear is just that hardware.
All right.
Hardware is a risky thing.
We need something that is not tangible.
Right. That's fair. I think software is easier because,
it's much more scalable.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep. Or low cost scalable, right?
Right. I mean, you know, you develop the app and then,
right,
just start making money. Whereas we require a constant flow of capital,
sure,
to continue to build,
sure,
continue to redesign. And that's a fair, you know, it's a fair concern.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a product here. If you've ever owned a smartphone, you know, mm-hmm, that every few years they,
right,
change so much.
Sure.
And the same will be true of our technology. You know, we'll,
right,
get this on the market, but then as it's selling, we'll be developing the next product. We,
sure,
have to, because the components on our board constantly get refreshed.
Oh, really?
You know? Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So the brains in here, it's an NXP processor.
Sure.
That'll only be around for so long. Our Bluetooth module, even,
all
our,
right,
amplifier, everything that we've got under the hood.
Sure.
Just, you know, has a shelf life. So
how do you solve that for the end user? Do they just have to upgrade that unit every
year? Well, the beautiful thing is, when someone buys this,
mm-hmm,
from their viewpoint, the technology in the dash is always updated with every mobile device they get.
Sure.
So it's a lot better than what we have in our cars now.
Right.
Where it's already an outdated screen when,
well,
you get,
totally,
the car.
Yeah.
When you get it, it's already,
yeah,
outdated. At least we're allowing people to improve, you know, their screen resolution, their GPS, their,
sure,
the sound quality, their,
okay,
charging, everything that gets improved with the phones will,
sure,
improve now in their dash as well.
Okay.
What I'm talking about, most of our consumers won't even notice the change.
Okay.
Because they don't care, honestly, what the brain is in here.
No.
As long as it works exactly
if
the same.
If it's working, then,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Yeah.
But it's like processors for computers. You,
sure,
can't buy them for so long, and then they change. They upgrade,
right,
them. They improve,
okay,
them. And so, you know, we'll continue to add features over time.
Okay.
We'll continue to integrate more with the vehicles to bring more and more data to the smartphone.
Sure.
One good example is our first product doesn't have the backup camera.
Okay.
That doesn't pull up on your phone.
Right. That made me cry.
Yeah.
I want
now I've got a backup camera. I've got a thing. It's like a little solar thing on my license,
sure,
plate that gives me a backup camera on my mobile phone.
All right.
And,
oh,
I didn't,
wow,
and I didn't have a backup camera in the car I'm driving now anyway. So,
oh,
whatever.
All right.
But we know our next version,
sure,
will have that improvement.
Okay.
And we'll continue to do things like that. We'll continue to bring more and more data from the car,
sure,
out to the mobile device.
Okay.
We can do a lot today, but as,
right,
we, you know, develop, we'll. And we have to, because cars are getting smarter.
Sure.
They're building more and more into them. So,
right,
Yeah, well, and so back to, you know, the concerns angel investors would have with hardware, mm-hmm. we just have to continually be innovating. We can't just be this one trick pony, like, sure. Oh, we got this good idea, look at this.
Right.
We have to.
This is good forever. It's like a Model T. Right.
It's good for now, but yeah. Now we got to keep going.
Sure.
So
I imagine one of the challenges that you'll run into is just the wiring, right? Because you're going to add backup camera and then a reverse trigger, parking brake trigger, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
I just installed a stereo, I don't know, a couple months ago. And I was amazed at how many wires were there.
Yep,
there's that were not like stereos before. It was just like, we got your 8 speaker wires, right?
Yep.
Power, constant, and ground, and you just move on with your, like, maybe an amplifier turn on or something like that. Yep. Instead of that was it. This one had like a dozen extra wires. And I'm like, okay, we got camera, we got reverse. It wanted to know parking brake, it wanted to trigger for that. It had all this extra stuff. I was like, holy cow. This is more than a 20-minute install.
Yep, they're more complicated to install now, for sure.
Sure.
Our wiring is all standard. So sure. If you've installed a car stereo before, mm-hmm. you'd be able to install
this. Yeah, I was looking at the colors. You got the gray, black. Yep. Yeah, white, black. Sure.
The only difference would be that we can plug into the CAN or resistive or digital. So we're doing that direct now.
Okay.
And have you ever... tied steering controls into the stereo?
I have.
Okay. So you don't have to buy a steering control module.
Oh.
You don't have to.
Okay.
We already have the brains in here to pick up everything that's going on in the vehicle, including steering controls.
Okay.
So you can just plug right in and set your steering controls and go.
You help us, the installers, find the wire to plug into, right?
Actually, we don't, but they know. So more of the story is
being like
the installers.
Oh, the installers. Okay.
So that's a good point to make. We'll only sell to dealers and distributors.
Oh, okay. So you're not selling to someone like me who's like, I can totally take it apart.
You could buy it now from Best Buy.
Okay.
Or AMS or Radio Doctors or Flynn Audio here in town. But if they didn't install it, then it'd be up to you to figure it out. But we are only selling to them.
Oh.
And we're doing that for a couple of reasons. One, Hartford Insurance, who's given us our products and general liability, said that's the only way we can.
For oh, one. Really?
Yeah, they said that.
If
they
want insurance.
Insurance. But it's fair, because we also don't want to support every single, like, if we sell 1,000 of these,
sure,
we don't want 400 people calling us.
No,
asking.
I get it.
We don't have it.
The tech support is...
Yeah, so we need that person in the middle to be with the person.
Okay.
Physically there and to support them, but also as we develop... working with installers who understand our product and are willing to take the time, they'd have to download our software. Mm-hmm. Even today, we have software that you put on a laptop and you plug into the front and you can program it.
Oh.
And today we're giving steering controls through that.
Sure.
And only steering controls, but we have the ability to do more.
All right.
Even today, we can do more.
More example being?
So we can pick up vehicle diagnostics today.
Okay.
And if we had our own mobile app
behind
that, we could do some cool stuff with that.
Oh, okay.
And we intend to, in the future, have that. So we want to just train the installers.
All right.
And people who buy the product, you know, from a dealer.
Sure.
Or dealers who buy it from a distributor understand that they need to read up and learn how to wire it in.
So it's training that whole crew of people, too, and I suppose instead of individual end users.
Yes.
Okay.
So train one person to install it 100 times.
All right.
Much more simple model than trying to support everybody.
That's fair.
And back in the day, you know, I used to sell computers for Sears in the 80s.
Okay.
And even then, computer makers kind of had the same idea. You know, you went to Sears and you bought a computer. And when you bought the computer, it was just expected that the person you bought it from was going to bring it to your house and set it all up and plug it in and show you. Oh, yeah. I spent more time in people's houses than I spent in the store.
Well, in the 80s, I mentioned.
That was early, you know.
Sure.
Early in that.
I just upgraded some of our machines to Windows 10, and that was such a headache. I thought, isn't that 2020? This should not be a headache. This should be like, click, done. But so I can only imagine the 80s, what you had to deal with computers.
I enjoyed it, but
you're setting up the control, alt, whatever.
Well, right. People weren't comfortable hooking up their printers and hooking all that stuff.
Sure.
People about computers.
That's crazy. Yeah. Interesting. So I want to back up a step to... The other businesses that you had, were they anywhere near this? Were they tangible items that you were selling?
No. This is the first. Well, I did have a business in La Crosse.
Okay.
I used to live in La Crosse. It was called Paradoc.
All right.
And I supported offsite backups.
Okay.
So the companies I worked with had data that they were concerned about losing.
Sure.
And so I worked with them to back up their data offsite.
All right.
And I got pretty creative with it.
Sure.
I had it so that they, if they saved their data in a certain folder,
yeah,
that folder would automatically back up to my file servers.
So you invented Dropbox before Dropbox was cool.
I did. Not only that, now this is 2001. I met a guy called Michael Skosma in Twin Lake, Michigan. And I said, hey, I've got all this data from these customers. It'd be nice if they could use a web browser to get to the data, log in with the username and password and just use a web browser. Can we do that? And he said, yeah. So truly, James, in 2001, 6 years before these two guys in MIT even thought of Dropbox, I was selling it as a product under the name Paradox. Same thing.
That's crazy.
But I didn't know about angel investments or venture. Right. And everybody that talked to me said, you should market this. And I thought,
What?
And so, yeah. And you know, I've had similar stories in the 90s. I talked to a guy, said, you should be able to just, you shouldn't need to run wires to speakers. You should be. And he said, well, you need a transmitter and a receiver on each end. And so I guess we kind of drew up the schematics for Bluetooth. Before Bluetooth. And then, even existed.
In the world.
So,
all right.
I've always had ideas, and that's even what I do today. I just I look at a problem and I come up with a unique solution.
Gotcha.
And so, but up till now, I haven't really stepped too far out.
Okay.
With these ideas, like raising money from outside people and giving up ownership in your company day one before you're even making money. That's new.
What happened to this pseudo Dropbox company?
Dropbox.
I mean, did you have servers?
Yeah.
Okay, so you had some server farm or a couple server farms.
Yep, and one by one, customers just dropped off because I was charging like $100 a month.
Okay.
And it was expensive.
But back in the day, relative to, like, if Dropbox didn't exist.
Yeah.
That's
so. I was charging more, and it did require, you know, the only way you couldn't just go online and download it.
Sure.
I was coming into your store. I didn't have the storefront that
wasn't
Dropbox
user friendly.
Had.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. The app itself was, once you got the app on your machine and it was set up and running.
All right.
Did you
code this?
No. I mean, I did from the server side of things and on the desktop, like the app itself.
Sure. I mean, but to get the web. The folder thing where somebody went and put a file in a folder and it automatically uploaded?
That was another guy, Michael Skosma in Michigan, who actually wrote all that magic that allowed people to get on a web browser.
PFM,
and get to
baby.
It.
Yes. Sure. All right.
Yes. And I mean, you know, I had people tell me then, back to that if I had marketed, I would have been able to sell so many people. Anybody I showed it to, we'll take it.
Sure.
You know, it was an easy sell. I loved going in and showing. To new customers
because
they always bought it.
Yeah, once you could scale that, then your price point would be lower. And
right.
I'd be talking to a billionaire right now.
Right. Well, yeah, if I'd made it so it was an online download and you could just set everything up online, that was the step I didn't take.
Sure.
You know, I didn't take it to make it big like that.
All right.
And even though I knew it was a great idea, I got to be honest, you know, I had a family at the time. I was working a full-time job in addition to my own business.
Sure.
And I just wasn't focused on that.
Right.
And, you know, now today, looking at these guys, the Dropbox, who've received, you know, love and praise and are considered the fathers of cloud computing, I'm like, gosh darn it.
If you only, but, hindsight is 2020, right?
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
But, you know, another part of it, too, is maintaining file servers and maintaining that. I think I had a lot less excitement there as well.
Sure.
So that was a good lesson for me as well. I mean, having a good idea and, you know, even getting that idea to market, if you don't have just some sort of passion behind it, who cares?
Right.
And that's why I have really stood by this now for years, because A, I know it's a great idea. It's going to take kind of a change in mindset for people to use their mobile device rather than what's in the vehicle and trust our method of attachment and the way it works. But it is a really cool, it involves cars.
Right.
It involves mobile devices.
Right.
Two of my favorite things.
Sure.
And I picture myself going to a car show,
mm-hmm.
and which we've done.
All right.
And that's my zen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I want to... Talking about file servers and logging into a website.
Well, snooze
cool,
fest.
But it, yeah, just not something I was driven to do. And,
all right.
And with this, it's a different thing.
Yeah.
It's a different thing from anything I've done before. Yeah, because of that. Because it's just... I would love to stick with this for 10 years.
Sure.
At least.
All right. So... It's interesting because I look at that thing and I'm like, the first thing I do when I get in my car is think, where can I set my phone?
Yeah.
And if I have things in the cup holders, like cups, I can't put it there. I'm thinking, this is dumb. I can't find a place to literally set my phone, which everybody has. And phones are too big now to actually fit in your pocket. And if you can sit down with your phone in your pocket, I don't know if it's good or bad, right? Anyways.
Yeah.
So I think you solved a huge problem just by having a shelf for the phone. Now having the shelf for the phone that actually does something... That's incredible.
No cables.
No cables. That's magical. I came from a gas station on the way here, and I saw some girl, right? She gets in her car, and then she put her little headset in.
Yeah, I see people with headphones all the time.
I don't, like, one, that seems dangerous to me.
Yeah.
Two, that seems stupid, because you got to take so much time, right? I'm like, get in the car and go. I don't even pay attention if the car's running. I'll know if it doesn't move, right? So it just takes so much time. And she just stopped at a gas station, right? So that means that she had to stop her car, take her earbuds out, and maybe she paused whatever she was listening to, maybe not. Moved on through life in the gas station, come back in the car, get the little headphone things in, play or resume or back up whatever she's got to do on her phone. It just seems like a huge time suck.
It is. And those long trips I was taking for that job I was telling you about,
yeah.
I thought about wearing headphones.
Oh, really?
Maybe I did.
Maybe.
No, but I mean, yeah.
Maybe it's just me. I'm just like, what do you do with a fire truck? If I was a fire person,
right?
I'd be like, seriously,
I mean, I knew it was dumb.
How much louder can the siren be? They're like, la, la, la.
And we carry around a sense of guilt, too. Like, every time we pick up our phone in the car,
sure.
At least I did. I just thought, oh.
That's the rule, right? That even the people that, even people that text while driving hate other people that text while driving.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very true statement.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's a thing.
And there's ways, once your device is in the dash, you'll mm-hmm. find out you can text and just talk.
Sure.
Yep.
You don't I hope have they're to. Not.
Well, what I mean is, like,
voice
a text,
text
comes
right?
in
sure.
and it reads it to you.
All right.
So, on my phone, again, using Android Auto.
Sure.
With that interface up, it will say text from home.
Oh, gotcha.
And then it'll read it to me.
Okay.
And then it'll say, do you want to reply? And I'll say,
sure.
Yeah. And that, right. And the speech to text... for like Google and Apple is
come a long way.
Yes, it is spot on 99% of the time.
Yeah,
and automakers, they're just not there. I can't less imagine
than,
them ever getting there. Yeah,
so much less than
right
to a fault. Yeah, I wish they would just say, "Hey, we're like 4/10 of the where we need to be." So, do you really want this in your car? No. So, at any rate, and what made you decide to go down this road? You had this idea, right? But tons of people have ideas.
Yeah.
So what made you want to pull the trigger on it? What was the moment where you're like, we can totally do this?
A lot had to do with the people who've come on board to help.
Okay.
So when I built it for myself,
mm-hmm.
That was it.
Sure.
That was all I was going to do with it.
Right.
And then after some of the excitement mm-hmm. I got from the people around me, I actually drew up some provisional patents.
All right.
And I thought, well, maybe there's something here. I'll
sure.
draw up some patents. And then the other founders, like I mentioned, one guy's ahead of prototyping at Trek or manages prototyping at Trek. Another guy that's in automotive for 35 years. And then another good friend of mine from Michigan who has started other businesses as well that have done well. And, the four of us got together and worked on this. And then people around us. So Trek Bikes.
Yeah.
When Ben went to them and told them what we were doing. They opened up their manufacturing facility. They made all of our early prototypes for free. They didn't charge us a penny.
Nice.
For the materials or the time or anything. And then, other big companies. Then we found we wanted to do better with our prototypes. We wanted them to look better. We wanted mm-hmm. them to be a plastic that wouldn't melt in the dash.
Sure.
I actually have some prototypes in the basement that look like a melted marshmallow.
Sure.
But when we sent out for bid, we weren't getting good samples back.
Okay.
So, I'm trying to think of the name of this company right now. Stratasys.
Okay.
So Stratasys, they make kind of a Cadillac 3D printer. We went to them and said, hey, who do you know who could do this for us?
Yeah.
Stratasys opened up their manufacturing. They made our prototypes for over a year. Didn't charge us a penny. The industrial designers we've worked with, we're working with a company now called Celltech.
Okay.
And they're a big dog in the acoustical engineering field.
Okay.
And they've shared improved designs with us. And just
nice.
As we go along, all the other companies that think this is a great idea, here, take this.
So you got a lot of help.
A lot of help.
That's super cool.
And so that's really what's driven us through.
Sure.
We're not just kind of like blindly passionate about this.
Right.
We're actually getting a lot of feedback from manufacturers and our customers, potential customers.
Sure.
That just keep us driven.
All right. Yeah. So what do you see? Say you get your $500,000 tomorrow. Be mm-hmm. cool.
Might, yeah. That'd be
hypothetically. Right.
That'd be great.
The 9 months from then, you get the units out there.
Yep.
Into people's hands and they're installed, I imagine.
Yes.
And then next step after that?
So once we get the funding to build these, mm-hmm. I will immediately start raising money for the next build.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And
more money.
Yeah. And a lot of that'll be, look, you know, we've already, these are already claimed.
Sure.
And we're building them. And hey, once we get to the finish line and we've built these mm-hmm. and they're in customers' hands, we've proven that we can do it. We've proven that we can build them. We've proven that we can distribute them. We've proven that people want them.
Sure.
Let's build
more.
And
you're getting feedback.
Yes.
All right.
So that customer feedback will drive a lot of things for
us.
But really, raising money this round is just to build these first 1,000 mm-hmm. and get them out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the day that check's in the bank, I'll be out there searching for the next one.
Gotcha. Okay.
To kind of follow up after
we've
delivered our first round of process.
So then second chunk of money comes in.
Yep.
And then what are you doing with that second chunk of money?
So depending on how quickly these sell, we believe that they'll sell in a month.
Okay.
And if we're right about that,
sure.
And they sell in a month, we'll go right to 10,000.
Okay.
And then we'll have 10,000 units ready to distribute.
So
out
you
there.
Tweak, rinse, repeat another 9 months or whatever?
Yep. Yep. And so that money comes in. And also we'll be making design enhancements.
Okay.
Like we want to make the case smaller and things like that in the back so it's easier to install and based on feedback we're getting.
Sure.
We'll make improvements. And then we build 10,000.
All right.
And that next round of funding will get us to the point where, you know, we're firing on all cylinders now. We've got a product and a company.
All right. To the point that you're profitable?
Yes.
All right. Yep.
So after the Series A funding round, now we're profitable.
Sure.
Maybe not profitable enough to build 1,000,000.
Sure.
Without some injection.
Right.
But, you know, we've proven that.
But I imagine at some point there's going to be a peak of capacity, right? Like where all the people that want them have them eventually, right? Whatever that number is. I don't know. There's 300 some odd million people in the U.S.
Yeah, there's
whatever. So.
There's new cars every year.
There are.
So there's new cars. I mean, we would continue, and we would court with the automakers too.
Okay.
We definitely, and we have. We actually sat in front of Ford.
Oh, nice.
GM. Yeah, and they.
Were they cool?
They were cool. They were very cool. We just met with Ford Michigan last year.
Okay.
And I don't know if it competes with what they're doing, but they just kind of like, thanks for your time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cool idea. Thanks for your time.
Cool idea.
So, you know, proving our market.
Sure.
And once we've sold 10,000, then we'll even before that, we'll continue to court with the automakers.
Okay.
Because this makes a lot of sense for the automakers
as
well.
Just to include from the factory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have this, our unit in there.
Sure.
Or use a lot of the technology behind.
And realistically, they could have an app on the phone or tablet or whatever, the little Ford app or GM app or whatever.
Exactly.
So you know, they can steal your data. Like,
it puts them in the market where they can supply essentially a tablet that's physically attached here and have their own software.
Mm-hmm.
And if people like that software, guess what? They'll take that into other cars with them.
Right.
And use it there.
Sure.
And so it gives the automakers a chance to compete in that market, in the software market.
Sure.
Which I would think they would want. I would think they'd want a shot at that.
I would hope so, but when you look at the stocks of the the big automakers,
but then
they're
having
a rough day.
It also makes it's attractive to buyers because if you get in the car and you're like, okay, in a year or two or even day one, I'm tired of this technology. Three screws in the front, you pull it out, you buy a faceplate from us, put it on there.
All right.
Now you can use your phone.
All right.
Or your tablet.
Sure.
So it would be day one for the automaker is a less expensive, more versatile technology solution.
All right. But they're licensing through you? Or?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes, absolutely.
All right.
Or building, getting from us directly.
Sure.
And then for the customer, they aren't going to turn away from a vehicle because of the tech.
Sure.
They're like, oh, well, all I got to do is take a few screws out. Doesn't cost that much anyway. Right. And use my own phone.
All right.
Kind of like we do at home.
Right.
You get tired of a laptop or a computer or mm-hmm. mobile phone. And
yeah.
You're not stuck with it for 10 years.
No. No. Sometimes I want to be, though, just because I'm used to it, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I still miss my Razor. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Everybody remembers the Razor.
Right? I think everybody had one.
That was the day. So, I guess as far as the ask goes, I imagine you're looking for investors. Is that what it comes down to?
Yes.
All right.
That is our focus.
And does this have to be one investor, or is it can be...
It can be one.
Yeah. But it could be more than one.
It could be more than one.
Okay. Yep. So, it doesn't have to be one person that just writes you a check for $500,000. It could be 500 people writing a check for $1,000 or something.
We would want to try to keep it to as few as possible.
Okay. Sure.
So, one would be ideal.
Okay.
Two or three would be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, four.
Sure.
And then there are what they call venture groups.
Okay.
Which take individuals' money and then mm-hmm. kind of go in almost like a bank.
But, sure.
And they would be great as well.
All right.
Working with one or two of those.
Cool. I like it. So tell us the website again, just so that people can check these things out.
Yeah. It's veroot.com. It's spelled V-E-H.
Mm-hmm.
R-O-O-T .com.
Right. And tell me about the name. Tell me where you came up with the name.
Short for vehicle route.
All right.
Vehicle route.
All right.
And we picture ourselves as a route for technology in the vehicle. So, mm-hmm. On a computer, you have kind of this root firmware that loads.
Right.
And then everything else kind of builds up on that.
Sure.
And we intend to be the same for vehicles.
Nice.
Where we have a platform that'll run any software, any hardware.
Nice. Dude, you got a clever invention there.
Thank you.
I'm excited to see where you're at another year or two, something like that, to see where it's gone, where it's going, all that jazz. I'd love to see it prosper and grow. I'd love to see backup camera on there.
Yeah, yep.
But backup camera is just one of those things that I thought I'd never use. I thought those are for people that don't know how to drive. But my God, are they magical. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
I love parallel parking like that.
It gives you a sense of security. And you can see all around you.
There is. It's just magical. Anyway, super cool. So this is Tom Robillard, CEO and co-founder of Veroot and Veroot.com. Super cool. Making the world of car stereos a better place.
Cars better, too.
I also want to say you have preamp outputs on the thing I saw.
Oh, yeah.
So if someone wants to add their stereo, even get a subwoofer output. Look at that there.
Yep. Yep, right. We've run it. We've run it both ways through our own amp.
Sure.
It's 25x4.
All right.
So a little bit on that for the audiophiles. We deliver better than CD quality sound over Bluetooth.
Okay.
We use, it's called Aptx HD.
Okay.
For the real nerdies.
All right.
And it really does sound better than a CD. And then we have a 25x4 internal amp.
Nice.
If you are, if you don't have an amp in your car. And if you do have an amp in your car, then we have the preamp.
You get the pre's. That's super cool. Yep. Awesome. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, brought to you by Bank of Sun Prairie. If you are listening to this on the web, please like, subscribe, and share. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is also brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist, that word shouldn't be that hard, services for small businesses across the country. On the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw-In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Tom Robillard, CEO and co-founder of Veroot, veroot.com.
That's it.
Awesome. Thank you, Tom, for being on the show. This has been super cool.
Thank you, James.
Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.